boys, it's very nice to see you both. What have you been up to over the summer? Welcome to the Where's Jeff podcast. What have you boys been up to?
Well, as you can see, I'm not in England. Got a nice backdrop of the Tenerife, well, cloud, anyway.
Yes,
but it's
beautiful, Thomas.
It's absolutely fantastic Euros. I think the lads did absolutely brilliant. But the Premier League is back.
Yeah, the real stuff. Well, I'm like you, Tom. I'm in La Manga having a little break. We're the same. We're a bit cloudy today. But we've had a lovely summer. I finally got a little trip away. And I had my oldest daughter's wedding just 10 days ago. So, you know, I got rid of all that pressure, but my pockets are totally empty.
I thought you said I've got rid of one of them.
I'm working on the next one.
Good stuff.
Says, what have you been up to?
Brilliant stuff. I have been playing a heck of a lot of golf. And the
There's
last couple
a
of
shock.
Days, very badly, I have to say. I've managed to reduce the handicap down to one.
Wow.
But I can honestly say the last couple of rounds, it was more, you could have put a two in front of that and it would have been a lot closer than one.
Hey, you'll be giving your mate Richard Bland a go next, Tiz.
Do you know what, Tomo? Oh, yeah. I played with him in the Pro-Am at my local club about 10 days ago.
Yeah.
And he only beat me by two shots.
No. Oh, my God.
Well, you could do the Open next year.
I have to say, I had quite a good round and he had an absolute shocker. I've never seen him shoot level par around that course. I reckon his average around that course when he plays against me is about 7 under. But all the excitement of the last few weeks just caught up with him a little bit. Wasn't quite on his game. And I don't think the two cans of lager on the 14th tee helped either.
Hey, that sounds like me and Terry McDermott round Royal Kirby. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. We used to have cans of Skol in the bag and we used to sit there after every couple of rounds on a bench going round Royal Kirby. And just necking these cans. Warm beer as well, guys. It was shocking.
Oh dear.
Nothing worse.
Let's get on into football, never mind your skull. Yeah,
exactly. Charlie, I was going to ask you, I mean, obviously as England fans, we were quite pleased with how far we got in the tournament and how close we came. What was your take on Scotland's performances in that championships?
An honest breakdown, I would be saying I was very disappointed. To celebrate a 0-0 draw at Wembley was understandable for us because we were expected, I think, by a lot of people that we would maybe take a bit of a hiding. But I actually thought on the night we did play
Absolutely.
Well. But that was one of the few... That was out of all the games, the really true positive we took in terms of attack-minded and going after the games. We sat for a draw in the first game, obviously that's what we did in Wembley, but we were well beaten in the first game because we were negative. And then we go for a different system for the third game and it's too late. It's typical Scotland. We show little signs of it, but Stevie Clark's got to improve. He's got to be more positive, Tiz. But overall, yeah. I was quite disappointed.
Well, the good news is we don't have to wait too long for the next World Cup.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. And in fairness, Tiz, quickly, I thought that was where we would evolve at the World Cup in Qatar. That's what I was looking forward to. And I think that what we showed, and I know there's great disappointments in the end, but I thought it was a fantastic run. But I think we will be better off for it.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that, Tomo. I think there were some promising signs. I think there were still parts of it that I thought we were perhaps a little bit too negative after going one up in the final. But I thought on the whole it was pretty good and gives us a lot of optimism going towards the World Cup next year. I think that's a fair assessment of what happened at that championships. But more importantly,
I think looking at you guys for England, is that you do have a lot of really good options. But I'm not sure about these two holding centre midfield players. That's the one thing I'm not sure where Gareth can take forward.
I think that was the big thing against Scotland. If we'd have gone for it and wanted it, but I think a draw was always going to take us into the next stage because he just left those two lads in there as holding, and you're going, be a bit more adventurous, take one of them off and let's take it to Scotland and win the game. But it was because we'd won our first game, it was a draw will do us very, very nicely. But
yeah,
let's move on.
So let's move on to the big stuff coming up this big weekend. Stuff. Well, I mean, Charlie, I know that as an Arsenal man, it's been perhaps a tough couple of seasons for you. Are you any more optimistic this season for your boys than you have been the last couple of years?
Not much. Very, very slightly, because the slight confidence I have, or being a bit more positive, is that some of the youngsters, Saka, we know, Smith Rowe, we know, there's Martinelli, I think, will eventually get a chance. So these type of kids, and Tierney will be fitter and stronger with Ben White's addition. So the youngsters are giving me some positivity. I'm not sure what we're going to get out of but Aubameyang again this season, Lacazette, who I'm a fan of. And for the life of me, I'm still surprised that Xhaka is still in there floating about, Bellerin's still about. We have four or five players. Arsenal must get out the door. Bellerin's been crying out for a transfer from, I would say, five seasons. And then we still have defensive issues. Is this goalkeeper good enough? Up front, midfield-wise, I'm quite happy. I like Partey a lot. I think Lokonga will do well. But I'm still unconvinced by it, Tizen. And it's a tough start for us come Friday night away to Brentford, because they're a good footballing side. They'll test us.
Do you not think Arsenal are just... I'm looking at them in the transfer market, and I go back in the Wenger days, and I know it has moved on, but I'm thinking they're pitching themselves below like a top six club, whereas they were always top two. Them and Manchester United were always the club that were going to go for the big players who were looking for them. I know Ben White is a good signing, but there's... I'm looking at things to excite Arsenal fans, and I'm thinking, where are they now pitching themselves? Where are they going? And that's, as Arsenal fans, you're going, wow, is that where we are now? Would you agree, or am I being a bit harsh?
I think that's fair, because like we seem to be interested in loan players. Odegaard is we know he's talented, but I don't think Arsenal particularly need that. They need a right back straight away. They need a good centre back. I know Ben White's been brought in. They need to solve the midfield issue, what the partnership's going to be. I would agree with that. We've been linked with some big players this summer, but it seems to be as soon as Chelsea or Man City or Man United or Liverpool, anybody else would be interested, they're probably going to shy away from Arsenal. So yeah, the standards have definitely dropped. Absolutely, totally agree with that.
And I think when I remember when I was playing, Charlie, the one thing when the fixtures came out at the start of the season, the one thing you didn't want to do was either play the team that won the league last season or play any of the teams that are coming up.
Know where you're coming from, Tez.
The enthusiasm and the excitement of those teams that have been promoted and the energy levels that they've got at that early stage of the season, it is quite something. So I think you're right to point out that Friday night could be a pretty interesting fixture.
Well, it is.
Yeah,
hey, Charlie, before you go on, you bang on, Tiz.
Yeah.
And the last two openers we've had, Liverpool has been Norwich, which was a score fest, and then Leeds United, which was exactly the same. And it's just, poor. The shackles are off and they go for it. It can be so tough. Over to you, Charlie.
it's tough because obviously when we used to always be... on a Saturday, going in to do my old job, I always had to walk in the morning and went by just about every week, Brentford's new ground. So it's a really good ground. Obviously, it'll be a cracking pitch, but Tony and people like that up front, you just wonder. I mean, Arsenal have got no Europe this season, and people are saying that should help. I don't see how it helps. I really don't, because it's not just because it's a lack of games that surely they're coming up with this evidence, but... the whole thing about Brentford, I think Brentford will be a surprise package, because if we take anything from the Euros and the way football's been going in pre-season, I think it's going to be a lot of open games of football, and that will suit Brentford getting into Friday night's game. So I'm quite nervous. I'll be having a few drinks out here at one of the bars.
I think you have to give a huge amount of credit to Brentford for what's gone on at that football club over the last few years. Obviously, missing out through the playoffs last season was a big blow to them, but they showed incredible character, I thought, to come back, finish third again, get themselves in the playoffs, but this time go that one step further with that win over Swansea. I mean, Thomas Frank's done some job there, hasn't he?
Do you know what? I was looking at the sort of administration side of them, how they've bought players, how they've developed players, and then they've sold them on. But they've still progressed. And it has. They've had that heartache of all the things. But you think, this is, my goodness, besides them playing great, attractive football, these are certainly a well-run club. And over those the last few years, with the players that they've brought in, they should be in a good position. And they've not been like Fulham, signed 10, 11, 12 players. They are relying upon the lads. So they've got a good structure behind them, which I think will stand them in good stead. They are a very attractive side.
Yeah, yeah they are. And only three players in. I know they've spent, what, the best part of, what, about $25 million on the three of them and only one out. I mean, Tiz, when you were coming out of the season and you had saved them yet again from going down or being in trouble with Southampton, did you ever feel that overbuying for a club who was trying to get out of that situation was more beneficial, or was it just staying with the loyal guys that you normally had?
To be honest with you, Chaz, I think the biggest thing about Southampton, one of the reasons why we did stay up all those years, I think was the closeness of the squad and the team spirit. And I think you're right, if you bring in too many, it can really disrupt the changing room. So I was never a big fan of a massive influx of players in one season. And we didn't really do that very often. I mean, I think we didn't have the money to do that. We probably, maybe three or four at most, I think, came in the summer. And that was about right for it not to disrupt everything. Because I think when you're a club that haven't got the finances to go and buy the best players, there's other things that you have to rely on to give yourself a chance of staying in the league. And that team spirit is one of the things that we did. And I think that's a really key part of the clubs down the lower half of the table have to get right in the changing room to give themselves a chance.
I'll tell you what, talking about teams who've thrilled and come up from the Championship, what a great game it is on Saturday afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
Manchester United Leeds. I can't believe, you know, that computer, the way it throws up games and it comes up with these ones at the start.
Are you suggesting it's rigged, Tomo? Are you suggesting that it's not completely random?
Would I? Oh, my goodness. But it is, isn't it? Brentford versus Arsenal. It was. But Manchester United Leeds is an absolute stunner. We will talk a bit later, probably, about that other one, which just so happened to come up, Spurs Man City. But Manchester United Leeds, it just gets there. Oh, you just think about it. The clash of two teams. And this Leeds United team, I think, has thrilled us absolutely massively all last season.
The one thing about Leeds are fearless. They just go after it. Bielsa just has that attitude, the energy. And I would imagine the start of this season they're going to go full pelt again. It goes straight at you. So Manchester United under a fair bit of scrutiny with their signings and how the formation and the lineup is going to be for Man United and who's still going to be there at the end of this month. But I fancy at least they have another decent season.
Well, Leeds were like that, because we looked at them and most of those teams who come and have a go, like Norwich did, they do it and they quite entertain us, but they go down. This Leeds team didn't do it. They had enough in the locker to be able to sort of win a lot of games. And I thought Rodrigo was just absolutely stunning. I thought was played some great stuff. And he's still there as well, which is a massive thing for Leeds fans.
I think that the way that Leeds went about their business last season, I just thought was incredible. And I'm just wondering if Brentford have taken a look at that and think, can they be just as positive as perhaps Leeds were? But I just think Bielsa just had his team so well drilled, and they were probably one of the fittest teams I think I've ever seen in the Premier League.
I think that's why he sits in a bucket, because he just gets tired watching his players running about.
But this fixture is one to be. I think it's a lunchtime kickoff on Saturday, isn't it?
That's right.
One of the fixtures of the weekend for me. And,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, well, I mean, this game last season produced 8 goals, so you know, that'll be nice again.
What do you think, Tiz? Man United, their business that they done?
Yeah, I think they've really had a good go. You know, obviously Sancho is a very good footballer, and I thought the centre back position is one that needed to be addressed.
Yeah.
and to be able to get Varane in that position, I think makes Manchester United a heck of a lot stronger team. I really think that the business that they've done has been very, very good. And I can see them, again, being a force challenging at the top of the table this season. What about you?
I think Ollie's got it spot on. You look at it, sometimes teams bring a lot of players in. I'm not saying sort of the 10 and 11 like Fulham. I think they bring like four or five and they don't really know where they're going to fit in. But I think Ollie, and this is one of those that I think, even at times ago, yes, as coaches, as managers, we know best. Sometimes you've got to open your ears and your eyes and listen to fans sometimes. And they keep saying, we need another centre-back. We need somebody to play along Harry Maguire. We need somebody on the opposite side who is going to assist, who is going to give us more goals. What has he done, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? He's just pinpointed two positions on that right. I know Dan James did very, very well, but he's never got... You look at the assist to Sancho, which is going to help Manchester United. They brought pace in again, which is always Man United's thing. And then they've rectified the centre-back. And Charlie, you'll know this. Sometimes Arsenal have messed about with centre-backs over the years and not got it right. And I think Manchester United have gone, no, Lindelof has done all right. And we've had others who've done all right. Is that good enough for Manchester United? No, it's not. So they've gone for Varane of Real Madrid, for goodness sake. And I think that it's two fantastic signings, which worries me.
No, I'm impressed. Yeah, I'm impressed with the signings. I mean, they let in 44 goals in the league last season, Man United, which tells you they did have the issues. Well, there's the issues with goalkeepers, but I think Henderson will prove to be the number one. But it's all about choices, isn't it? I mean, he's got so many options now, and I think that's where the pressure also comes in. You know, where is he going to fit Rashford in? Where is he going to fit these? But I think they're looking as if Martial's on his way out. So they've got people to fit in and try and keep the system happy, but he's got very, very good variety of options now. And I definitely see them challenging. I don't see anything out with the top four for them. They're definitely in the top four for me.
Yeah. Just to flip quickly, one of the disappointments of the Euros was probably Fernandes, who you were really excited. This Portuguese side has got such talent, and he failed to deliver on the big stage, which, you know, I know we're just digressing here, but he did disappoint me, which was quite something.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big season for him. He played a lot of football, didn't he?
Yeah, maybe so too.
I wonder if that just took its toll a little bit on him. I think, you know, you've got to cut him a little bit of slack given how good he was during the season for United.
No, absolutely.
18 goals in the season was a terrific return for me. So yeah, that's one of the standout fixtures of the weekend for me, the Man United Leeds one. And Tommy, you touched on the Super Sunday game, which the computer has randomly thrown up. Spurs against Man City. I mean, that's some way to finish off the fixtures for the weekend, given what's happened with Mr. Kane over the last couple of weeks. And so do we still think that Harry Kane will be a Tottenham player come the end of the transfer window?
Yes, I do think he'll be there. I think it's the length of his contract that he's got at Spurs and what Daniel Levy will want. And I know there's the talk of 100 million, but you're paying 100 million for Grealish. Surely that elevates that money, and that'll just make Daniel Levy sit a lot more comfortable. But I think he'll go. And whether they had this discussion last year or not, and it seemed in that interview with Gary Neville as though that had taken place. I just think they need sort of clarity now, quicker, because if he was to go, how do you replace Harry Kane? And it is just, you look at Grealish, and I know Grealish is not Harry Kane, but straight away they were doing the deals, getting deals in Dean Smith to make sure like they didn't miss out. That's not happening with Harry Kane, so I do think he will remain a Tottenham player.
So what do you, Tomo, if he was to go on the last day of the season, if he was to go, what do you think the figure would be that Daniel Levy would be able to prize out of Manchester City come 11 o'clock on the last day of the transfer window?
I think he would prize, I think, somewhere in the region of 125 million. And I think he's actually wanting a bit more. I think he's wanting about 150 140. But I think that is where it could happen. And it could be a Berbatov again. But the words of Harry Kane, what he's come out and he's said about, he doesn't want to disrespect Tottenham, doesn't want to disrespect... And I'm thinking, you can't be coming out with those words. And then you wouldn't be the Harry Kane who had thought you were. And then flip it and go as you would.
I'm like Tomo in the respect. I think he'll be there because Levy is a tough negotiator. And I was listening to Pep's interview a couple of days back. And he was saying, well, we can't update you because at the moment Spurs are non-negotiable because of obviously, well, we're talking about 100 million. I think Man City are looking at us thinking we were hopeful that Kane's going to force the issue. I don't think Harry Kane's the type to force the issue. I think he's just going to say, well, I'm a good pro, I'll go on with it, I'm not happy. And then Levy's got a decision to make. But he's a tough negotiator, Levy. He doesn't give much. And where I agree, more in agreement with Tomo, is because he's got 3 years left in his contract, and I'm pretty sure if Harry Kane is told you need to stay on, but an agreement reached for a year, then I think he'll just get his head down and go on with it.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting because I think it's a slightly different situation. You mentioned Berbatov there, Tomo. I think it's a different situation with Harry, given that his importance and the volume of goals that he scored for that team over so many years. I think it's a slightly different situation to the Berbatov one. I don't think Spurs can afford to lose Harry Kane, because if they do, I think they become a fairly average team. Harry Kane elevates them to a team that is capable of challenging for Champions League places. Yeah. I'm not sure without Harry Kane in the team, they can challenge for a Champions League place. What do you think?
No, I would agree with that. I think the other issue and all is that if Harry Kane decides that Spurs are not as ambitious as he is in going for the honours, then there'll be a few other like that. You know, Dele Alli said his troubles. Son's always been a guy who's delivered, but there'll be others who I think would say, well, maybe this isn't what we thought. When you see people like Alderweireld and Vertonghen and all those starting to leave over that period of time when they were there, then I would see that's a problem for Spurs if they were to sell Harry Kane.
Well,
big problem.
I think after the break, maybe the team that he could have gone to, we could discuss them after the break in this second part, and that it will be Manchester City, the money bags.
And also, we'll be given our predictions. I hope you've given this plenty of thoughts, lads. We'll be given our predictions for the Champions League places and the relegation places after the break. Okay, guys, welcome back to part two. And I think it's only right that we start part two with one of the biggest football stories for many, many years. And that is that Barcelona can no longer afford to pay for Lionel Messi. So he's ended up going to probably the only team on the planet that could afford him, Paris Saint-Germain. Charlie, what's your take on the turn of events there, and how surprised are you that Messi will not be finishing his career at Barcelona?
I'm absolutely gutted, Tiz, I'll be honest. I followed this little guy for a long number of years when I was fortunate to go to Barcelona a heck of a lot when I had a place in Mallorca. And I seen him develop, and I remember in one particular night, to my anger, but he scored 4 against Arsenal in the Champions League night, and I was there, and it was just breathtakingly good. But I think the way that Barcelona's been going, mishandled, and then Laporte has to come back in and rescue it, it shames football that he shouldn't be finishing his career there. Who knows, he might go back in a couple of years' time. But I was absolutely gutted. I just don't see him fitting in the PSG way. He'll probably win every honour, but I just don't feel the same. So I am absolutely gutted that he has gone from Barca.
It was quite emotional, wasn't it, his farewell?
Yeah.
And where have we got to in football is that this money, you look at what's happened to Barcelona as a club, as a foundation of greatness about the game, but the administration side of it, previous, has just absolutely... And you can see why they wanted that European Super League. Because they're absolutely, they're skint. They needed all this wealth that it was going to bring. And that is why them, Real Madrid and Juventus, all skint, all needed it more than what the Premier League clubs. But they've so sort of, how they've handled their affairs at Barcelona is is truly amazing. I'm like you, Charlie. He's been the most wonder. The debate about Ronaldo and Messi will go on. And it is a shame that we're not going to see it end up. Okay, Ronaldo's gone and moved on a couple of times. And what a tremendous player. But Messi has always been a delight for me because he wasn't always falling about and trying to win free kicks and that. And I've always loved the way he's played. And it is so disappointing not this fairy story not to end up that he finishes at Barcelona. It is just incredible. And how the heck Paris Saint-Germain, financial fair play, he can be allowed to go there? It's just mind-boggling.
I've got a slightly different, perhaps more controversial take on it, Tomo. Because I sat on, you watch the press conference and he cries and it's all very emotional. And I'm actually sat there thinking, I'm not being funny, mate. If you're that bothered about it, if you're really that bothered, you're not going to have to work again for the rest of your life. If you're that bothered, play for Barcelona for free this season. If you're that bothered, if it really, really irritates you that much and you really love the club that much, just go, do you know what, lads? You give me a lot of money down the years. I'll play this season for free and I'll finish my career at this football club. That's my opinion.
Well, that... Well, I think it.
I think he also knows there's another 7 or 8 getting sold, so he's out of there.
Oh my goodness! Just that was very cynical.
I don't know, Tom. It was just the way that I feel about football. And if you are really that bothered about your club, and if you love your football club that much, you've got enough money to last you the rest of your life. You don't have to worry about that. Just do something nice and go. I'll play for free for a season. It would have been. The most majestic thing I would ever have heard in football, and I think it would have just made him all the more popular, as if he couldn't be any more popular. I think people would have just warmed to him just incredibly, and it would have been the most amazing thing I would have ever heard in football. But I'm just a dreamer.
My mind is just turning over, thinking what you're saying. I'm thinking, wow, yeah, that would have been a bigger fairy story. And
wouldn't
it really
it
would have
been incredible.
But...
I bet you never did that with Southampton, did you?
Well, funny enough, Charlie, I obviously turned down a lot more money at other places than I could have earned at Southampton. And actually, the last year of my contract at Southampton, I took a drop in wages.
Yeah, you never moved. You never moved from the centre circle, so why pay you any more?
To be honest, I think they saw the injuries coming and that's why they reduced my contract. And they were absolutely right, to be fair.
Just quickly moving on, lads, talking about Mega Richards and everything with PSG. Do you know, I don't know how you feel, but Manchester City being, if they could spend £125 million plus the £100 million on Grealish, how does that sit with you? I feel very uncomfortable. About how that would be allowed to happen. And I know there's things going on with UEFA. There's still things going on with the Premier League. And it just financial fair play just seems as though it does not and never did happen.
You didn't seem that bothered about it when Liverpool paid £70 million for a goalkeeper and then £75 million for a centre-back, Tom. How didn't he talk about that then?
It's quite easy. It's not in the realms of sort of... Manchester City paying what £100 million, then £125 million. I think it's slightly different. As you know, we'd never gone there before. We went in the realms of all the teams who had spent money over it. And as you've seen since, we're probably paying the price for it. We haven't spent really big money since. I would have loved to have been in for Grealish.
No, I think you went after that because it was requirements. It was like Man City paying £50 million for left back and the right back. But this is different. At the start of, sorry, at the end of last season, Pep Guardiola was quoted as saying, "We don't have the finance. There won't be many coming in. We're pretty strapped for cash right now." And he said the other day, "Oh, but we've sold several of the younger players and other players on, and some have went for free. Angelino went for something like £13 million. They brought in 25. So of their skin, how did they manage to find that 75 for Grealish? and potentially 120 for Kane. Doesn't sound as if they're skint to me.
Cover your point about the financial fair play. I mean, it seems to me that that stuff is just completely gone out the window now. It's almost like that people are just going to disregard those rules, and I think they'll end up just scrapping it. Do you not think so?
No, absolutely, Tiz, but it does still sit uncomfortably with me. But I think something has to be done. I think there has been legal challenges to it being relevant in football, not just in the Premier League, because a lot of the big money people don't want it to happen. It will be a shame, I feel, but I think they will have to do something different. And hopefully UEFA, FIFA, Premier League are looking at it.
You can ask them to look at it, but I don't think we're going to get any help from the UEFAs and all these type of people, because they'll just play party politics with all the clubs that are probably saying that they're financially strapped. But it'll still be dominated by the main powerhouses, won't it? Yeah. And that worries me. It'd be nice for the PFA or the English Premier League to start to look at proper communications about potential capping of certain amounts of money, but it's a waste of time. This financial fair play does not make any sense now.
What do you think of City? I think the capture of Grealish, I think he is an absolute star. I've been asked who I think is going to be the star of this season. It could be him. But where is he going to fit in?
They've got a very fluid style of play, Tomo. And I think, actually, when you look at what happened at the back end of the second half of last season, I think it wouldn't surprise me if Sterling was the one that missed out for Grealish coming in. He was kind of out of favour for a fair chunk of the second half of last season. And you just wonder if Pep has just thought, maybe I might try and cash in on Sterling. So it wouldn't it wouldn't surprise me if Sterling perhaps wasn't at Man City this time next season, especially if Grealish has a very good first half of the season.
Well, do you think
controversial? I know.
Yeah, I was going over the line where they're looking at Bernardo Silva looks as if he's on his way out, because we expect Grealish and Foden. I mean, what real young talents they are, or Grealish is a good age now, but they've got sensational choices, and I think someday, because of this finance, will have to be
sacrificed
up. And Bernardo Silva will probably, sacrifice is the one would be where I could see interest from Sterling. The problem is that, what value do you put in Sterling if you're going to sell him? Because, you're asking the question is, who could afford them?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, to be honest, if they can afford to keep him, it's to have such a strong squad of players with that ability, to cover for any injuries, any losses of form. That's what makes a team of champions, I guess.
You've got the midfield. You need a Fernandinho. You need a Rodri in there to hold it. So then, where do you go? Who do you then? You've got Kevin De Bruyne. You've got Foden. You've got Mahrez. You've got Sterling. You've got Bernardo Silva. Gundogan. You've got Gundogan, Charlie, but
top scorer.
Absolutely, what a season he had. Where did he all fit in? I think Grealish could be a super sub. I'll tell you, he won't want
the deepest super sub in history.
Oh my goodness! But they haven't got a centre forward, as we've said there. They've played with a false nine. Sterling, when he was getting a game, was a false nine. And you're looking at him, you think, how is he going to pitch all this? And he was only playing that, by the way, because he didn't fancy Jesus. Don't be giving me the thing where this was a sort of brainwave of Pep's where the false... He didn't fancy Jesus. So he was out of the equation. He was sat on the bench.
Absolutely.
So he was using all the other Foden as a false nine, Kevin De Bruyne as a false nine. So it was... he's saying, Sterling... Mahrez fit in? So would he be one of one who's sacrificed?
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting, mate. It'll be interesting. But anyway, Tomo, I wanted to ask you about what's going on the other side of Stanley Park.
Yes,
mate taking the Everton job.
What's happened?
On earth is going on?
Rafa's back in town.
Rafa's back.
Agent Rafa. Oh my God,
that's a fact.
It is. It has gone absolutely crazy, honestly. It's in overdrive social media about Rafa. hand on heart, I can't understand why, first of all, they would go. Why split the fan base straight away before the season has even got underway? But I think Mascheri's going, I'll do it my way. Frank Sinatra, I'll do it my way. And I don't care what everybody's saying. They've got themselves a good manager, but they're still split. And I know it's only pre-season, and they say results don't count. Getting battered by Manchester United 4-0 doesn't help. And that's the thing with Rafa. So he is a very good manager. And if there's bad results come along, and they come along frequently, it'll go. Honestly, the fans will turn so quick, it'll be. And they have turned on other managers. And I just think that
this is quick.
I just think, why? Why?
First 15 minutes on Saturday.
But Charlie, why take that risk? You know, you've done on Soccer Saturday, guys. You've done Everton games, and you can see over the years, because it has not been great, they can turn very quickly, and it's.
I always tended to get them, Tomo, the first game of the season, especially when they're Goodison. I think they take on your lot this weekend, Tiz, and you can guarantee, because they're so split, that this is not good and entertaining for them. And I don't mean nice silky passing like they watched under Martinez. I mean getting the ball forward with pace, with energy in the team. Then after 15, 20 minutes, those Everton fans, as they've done most of the times, let the players know their feelings immediately. And you go, wow, this is some pressure already. And it's going to come quick because Rafa's sitting there, because he's not going to entice them. So a real tough start for him. And it'll be interesting to see how they react against Southampton this Saturday.
Do you think, end of the transfer window, Richarlison will be at Everton Football Club?
Have you heard something that we don't know, Tomo?
No, it's just the way he's been. He was at loggerheads, wanting to play in the Olympics, desperate to be there. I think he was out to further himself by playing in it, putting himself out there. And to me, there's always been an undercurrent of this guy at Everton Football Club. And somehow, some way, I think this guy will want out.
And also, you look at the two players that they brought in Andros Townsend and Damari Gray. Very similar position to him. So, yeah, it's a case of covering that.
I know those two lads are good players, but Dwight McNeil, who they are after, I would think fits the bill even better. I'm a great admirer of Dwight McNeil. I think he's a sensational player. Not any Burnley fans that I'm looking for him to move on.
No, but I think, I can understand that. But I think Ricalis has reached a point, I think especially under Ancelotti, that he thinks, I'm probably better than this now. I could go abroad now and play at a level that's potentially Champions League, certainly a European competition. I think that's where his mind is now. That's why probably Olympics made sense to him.
And I think the bottom line is, I don't think he'd done it enough for Everton. Like James Rodriguez, who looks as though he's probably not a Rafa sort of player, dare I say it. So I think you know what Rafa and how Rafa likes his teams. Everybody's got to work one cause, work for the team. And if those two players, James Rodriguez and Richarlison, are not going to toe the line with Rafa, I can see them in the exit door.
I can see Everton in a really unfavourable position this season. I really do. I think, you know, I've seen too many managers at Everton who try and play the game, and the fans are caught because they don't get the energy, they don't get commitment that they like to see sometimes. I think this is going to be a tough season for Everton. I mean, they were mid-table last season, but I think this could be tougher.
I mean, I have to say, on the positive point for the Everton fans, it's probably a pretty good fixture for the first game of the season.
Well, they've got a good start, Tiz.
Given that I witnessed two Southampton friendlies in the last week down at St Mary's and wasn't particularly impressive. But however, I guess there was quite a few players, first choice players, that were missing for Southampton, so I might be being a little bit harsh on them. But it wasn't particularly cohesive, the two games that I saw.
Well, that's the thing with Rafa. They have the first six games are, or as they would say, as winnable. But that creates its own pressure if you don't get off. But besides that, let's get off Everton. What about my Reds? Come on, lads, let's hear some positivity.
Well, Van Dijk's back.
Oh, all right, thanks very much.
So Van Dijk's back. Gomez is back.
Listen, I really.
I'm not sure, Tomo. I don't see much change. I don't change. I don't. I think Van Dijk. Well, do you want a point of view, or do you want to just tell me to shut up?
All right, sorry.
Van Dijk back is a big bonus, but he won't be bang on it for a few months, surely. I don't think he will be. But I think you're looking stronger, and certainly in that department. Are we going to get another ordinary season from one of my favourites, Firmino? Are we going to get a better reaction of a season from Mane, who was the best for a period of time? They've got to deliver now, this front three again, because you've relied on them so much.
Well, Charlie, that's my point of view, is that with Virgil van Dijk, we've signed Konate, Virgil van Dijk, Joe Gomez, Matip, all fit. It helps with Trent Alexander-Arnold how he plays, and Andy Robbo, although Robbo would probably be missing for this weekend. But everything, the cohesion of the team, but you're quite right, Charlie, up front, I think Sadio, Bobby, Mo still had a good goal scoring season. But we missed shed loads of chances last year, unbelievable chances. I don't think that can happen again. And I think we're up at the top end, we will be better this season. And I think that everybody would be scary. Until Grealish went to Manchester City, I thought, in my mind, we were going to win the league this year. But now with the Grealish going there, I do think that tips it in favour of Man City.
Apologies to any of the clubs that we haven't mentioned yet. We'll get round to you next week. But it's time to make our predictions for the season. So I think we're going to start with top four in the order that you think they will finish. Charlie, I'm going to go to you first.
Top four in order. I'm going Man City, Liverpool, Manchester United, Chelsea.
Ooh, OK. Go on, Tomo. Do you disagree with him?
To be honest, no. I thought, have you been listening to my tips? Because that's exactly what I've gone for. As I say, I think the Grealish thing tips it. City, Liverpool, Manchester United, Chelsea. In that order.
Wow. Well, that is interesting.
Over to you.
I've got, we haven't spoken about this, but I've got the same four teams, just in a slightly different order. So I've got Manchester City winning the league. But I've got Manchester United in second place, and then Liverpool, and then Chelsea. Do we think any outside of those four? Who outside of those four do you think will be the main challenger to those four that we think are going to be there?
Well, I think if Harry Kane stays, which I think he will be at Spurs, I think they're going to be the nearest to it. Charlie, your Arsenal, I still think they'll fluctuate. With performances. Be interesting to see if West Ham can do what they did last year. I think David Moyes did a terrific job there. But it's just, if you ask me, and can Leicester do it again? Can they push again? It'll be interesting.
That's the interesting one for me. Two fifth season finishes in the last 2 years for Leicester, and really had great chances both seasons to finish in that top four. Can they pick themselves up and go again? Obviously, won the Charity Shield last week, which was a big fillip for them, and the FA Cup. So I think Leicester might be the team that get closest to those top four. What about you, Chaz?
Before you mentioned your four, Tiz, was the exact same finish as last season, and Leicester being fifth, but should have got there. I thought at the time they should have got there. So, yeah, I still see that, guys. I see Leicester as part of that top four who are going to be the closest. If Kane stays, Tomo, Spurs will be there, but he was there last season. Spurs and Arsenal look as if they've got a bit of catching up to do. I would love nothing better than West Ham and David Moyes to really be in the mix again, because it was an exciting season. But the one for me outside those top four is definitely Leicester.
And what about the Europa League? Do we think that there is anybody outside of the teams that we've just spoken about there, outside of that, who might have enough quality to challenge for the Europa League? Somebody like an Aston Villa or a Leeds maybe?
Dare I say, I think they'll all fluctuate, and as we seen last year, Villa had a great start. West Ham really had a great season. These teams are going to be the ones. Wolves were always the one that you thought who could make that step forward. They seem to have sort of just drifted away at the moment, and you may be worried for Wolves because Nuno Espirito Santo leaving. So I don't see anybody. I do think, and you're going to come to it, Tiz, the bottom is going to be quite interesting. I really do think it.
Yeah, I think there's a whole batch of clubs, isn't there? And try to even look at the list. I mean, we're complimenting people how they play. Brentford, we know Norwich like to go and attack, but I think the toughest thing of all is trying to find three out of this bottom ten for me. Tiz, how do you see things bottom?
At the bottom, I think you're right. I think it's going to be very interesting. There is a lot of teams which will probably come into people's thoughts when they're talking about the bottom three. I've gone for Brentford as one of them. I've gone for Norwich as the second one. And I've gone for Crystal Palace as my third one. Yeah, I think it could be a tough season for them. Bit of transition, and I just think if anything happens to Zaha, if he gets sold or if he picks up an injury, it's a real struggle for him. And so I think I'm going to go for a. I don't want to put all three of the promoted teams to go down again because that's just a bit cliched. So I've thrown in Crystal Palace as my ringer. What about
well,
you guys?
Mine is, I am going to go for Brentford. I think they will excite, but I don't think they will have enough. And I do think Norwich as well. I think they go, now it was a toss-up. You're not going to like me for this, Tiz. But I'm going to go for Burnley. No, but I was.
You know, Burnley were in my thoughts, I must admit.
I did. I'm just thinking, because I'm going for Burnley, I just think they've deflated, skated with those areas before. And I'm thinking Sean Dyche has just worked his magic at this place. And have the two of them sort of done enough? And they always sort of out there battling for it. And I think Watford will survive. But it was, I'm sorry to say, I was actually thinking of Southampton, but I thought you would not come on the podcast anymore.
No, he would still be on.
I can understand those thoughts, to be honest with you, Tom. Obviously, we've lost our main goal scorer, which is a bit of a blow.
Absolutely. Not a bit of a blow, Tiz. It's a big blow.
Yeah, it is a big blow. I won't deny that. We've got to hope that our signings that we've made hit the ground running and that we can get goals from somewhere because his goals will be very, very sorely missed. I'm hoping Shea Adams steps up another level again. I think he's got the potential to do that. But I think you're right. I think it could be a tough season for my team as well.
Charlie!
Yeah, I think Charlie, you're going to have to get a lot of goals from midfield. I am similar. I've gone Norwich, Burnley, but I've gone Watford. I think Watford will be in the mix again. I know they like to come up and, you know, the good organisation and a bit of power, but I think a lot of the clubs are similar. I was in between Watford and Crystal Palace, but I've gone Watford.
Interesting. Well, we've stuck our necks on the line. We've given our predictions and we are there to be shot at, and I'm sure on social media, we will get plenty of abuse when the teams that we predicted to get relegated are challenging for Europe. In fact, what can't ever be as bad as my prediction of Leicester to get relegated the season that they won the Premier League? So it can never, ever, ever get any worse than that.
Just at that moment, where's Jeff when you need him?
Where is Jeff? Honestly.
Yeah, where is Jeff? Yeah.
Who needs Jeff? We can do this on our own.
Lads, it's been great. It's been great. The first time of asking.
Good to be back. It's great, boys.
Lovely to chat to you, chaps. And look forward to next week's podcast when we will be reviewing the weekend's Premier League action and also looking forward to the following weekend's fixtures as well. Boys, it's been an absolute pleasure on episode 1 of Where's Jeff?